You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 17th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my partner and my buddy, Jim Allen. How you doing, dude?
Partner in crime. I'm good. How about you?
Other than remembering that this is the, I can't remember what year it is, but this is the time of year when we remember and reflect on Wayne Grasek leaving us. I'm doing fine. I know that April, in the middle of April, is when I start to really think about him a lot. And we're thinking about you, buddy, and we do miss you. And it's always tough around this time of year. But I'm doing fine, except it's a little bit colder than I expected it to be.
Yeah. Well, I figured you're like the barometer of that. If it gets cold, I just wait for you to tell me. Because sometimes I don't know. I got as much fat on
sometimes
me.
Like, I don't know.
I'm like, let's watch. I found Monty Python on this. Is my diversion number one for the day. I found Monty Python's Holy Flying Circus on Netflix. And they had this one where the guy, this mother's chiding her son. And says, well, you're gonna collect ants now? You said you were going to take care of them like you did the sperm whale.
Oh, no. All right, then, Mom. All right. Well, with that, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Lions pitcher Dietrich Enns. We're going to talk about the Samurai Showdown that was on Friday night, and we're going to discuss the elephant in the Kansai region and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so while Jim is making one of those weird faces because he's trying to figure out what in the heck is Gibson talking about this
exactly
week? Because we usually don't see each other when we record, but we're using a software that allows us to see our smiling faces. And so I'm getting not smiles from Jim. So anyway, we have some
well, we had two elephants discussed today. That's why you threw me a curveball. You threw me a changeup, actually. I was expecting a different elephant.
Was it high and tight? Because if it wasn't me.
No, it's just a changeup. It was just a changeup.
Just a changeup. All right. So, you know, we've had some guests kind of stack up now, which is good. So that means we have options as we move along here, and that's better than has been in the past couple seasons here when we were just scrounging and hoping we could get someone to come on and try to arrange chats and interviews and all that stuff. And anyway, I went out to Cebu or Beluna Dome on Wednesday, and I caught up with Dietrich Enns. And I have to say this, I'm not a Lions fan, but the staffers are so helpful. The PR people are wonderful. The workers in the stadium, when you walk past them, they all greet you so nicely. Maybe they're just missing people as well, that when the media can come in, because we obviously can enter the game whenever we arrive at the stadium. And so everyone knows we're part of the media. So they are always nice to us before they actually let the general public in. And they're just always nice to us. And so that, just experiencing that again was great. But the Cebu people, particularly Miss Kameda, she was really helpful with from the PR department, and they're just all really nice. So, I mean, I could definitely root for this team because the people are so nice out there, and the fans were even nice. I think the whole being able to cheer like normal and being a normal fan again is brought them back down to earth. So anyway, I got to stand and talk to Dietrich Enns right in front of the bench where we usually do some of those interviews off to the third base line. Jim, I know you know where we're talking about, on the way to the bullpen. And Dietrich won 10 games last season for the Lions, and that tied him for second in terms of wins on the team. And he was the first lefty import to win at least 10 games for the team in 69 years. So that's cool. Earned him another year with the Lions. And now he's showing guys like Mark Payton and David McKinnon and Jesus Tinoco, showing them the ropes out there in Cebu land. So anyway, we got to talk for a few minutes, so let's take a listen. All right, we're with Dietrich Enns. Is it Enns?
Enns, yes.
Yeah, you know, you hear the Japanese pronunciation and you're not sure if that's right, so that's how it goes. All right, nice to meet you. Thank you very much for sitting down with us and taking some time.
Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me.
So, you are in your second year. How do you reflect on your first year in NPB?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was a success in just, you know, I felt very comfortable from the get-go. I mean, the staff here with Alliance did a great job of making me feel right at home, and just the guys kind of embraced me in the locker room, so I got to know them pretty well, and, you know, I got to learn a little Japanese from them and, you know, try to teach them a little English along the way. So, but yeah, I mean, it was a fun season. We made the playoffs. You know, we didn't accomplish our ultimate goal, which was, you know, to win the championship and to win the leagues, but, you know, I think we're making steps in that direction, so I'm really excited about coming back, and, you know, as I look back a little bit from last year, I was, you know, happy with the way it went overall.
Now, you hit some marks last year, you know, marks for a pitcher who is left-handed, who is not Japanese, and pitcher for an import in his first year hitting some marks. So what have you set for your goals for this season?
Yeah, I just want to improve upon all my stuff. You know, just, you know, it's hard to, you know, set a goal for numbers wise like at the beginning of the year, because you just want to have one good game at a time, and, you know, but yeah, looking back, you know, if I can improve on how I did last year, you know, taking the experience from last year and, you know, moving it into this season, would really, you know, like to, you know, perform better than I did last year as a whole. Haven't got off to the best start, you know, I feel like I'm headed in the right direction, just need to, you know, just bounce back.
Now for the hard question. You're transitioning to a new manager, and he's a rookie manager in the sense that he hasn't managed on this level. So how much do you know about his career, and how are you familiar with him?
Yeah, I know he was a successful player here in Japan, and then he went over to the States and was successful with the Mets and the Rockies. And, you know, he was a very, very talented player. From just the time of last year as the bench coach, getting to know him a little bit. And then this year, you know, he's been good to me. And, it's, you know, it seems like a good manager for the team. So I think he brings a lot of energy, and the team brings a lot of energy. So I think it's, you know, the guys are really embracing it well, and so we're really looking forward to this whole season.
What's he like? Is he more the no-nonsense kind of a guy, or is he maybe have fun when you get your work done kind of guy? What kind of guy is he?
Yeah, I think it's when it's time to work, it's time to work. You get your work in and you work hard, but, you know, there's a time to have fun in the game too. So I think there's like a happy medium of both. And, you know, just really just, you know, focus at the task at hand, and then you can enjoy it while you're doing it too.
I'm at the age now, I used to talk to him when he was a player.
Yeah.
So now he's a manager, and he was just meticulous. He was meticulous in his answers when he thought about how he was going to reply to your questions, and he was meticulous about his approach. How is he in preparing you guys to play?
Yeah, I think that goes, you know, without question, that, you know, he really gets the guys ready to go. You know, that's one thing I've noticed, you know, with our whole coaching staff is, you know, they're prepared, and they do the best they can for us guys to, you know, get us ready to go each day. And so that's, you know, from the scouts to the pitching coaches to, you know, I can't speak as much as far as the hitting coaches on that side and defense, but, like, you know, in practice we're preparing, and, you know, the pitching coaches are really getting us prepared for each game.
All right. Now, every team changes in the offseason. That's normal. Your team has undergone some changes at some key positions. How's that transition going?
I think it's going well so far. I mean, you know, when you lose a guy like Morey in the middle of your lineup, who's a catcher, you know, where a lot of guys have, you know, deep relationships with him, you know, the pitcher-catcher relationship, you know, that's always going to be tough. But I think Suge and Koga have really stepped up so far and, you know, taking on a little bit more leadership as the catcher, and, you know, with me especially, as, you know, just trying to get to know me. And so it's been good, and I'm looking forward to, you know, moving forward this year and, you know, really kind of strengthening that bond between us.
Now, you've got some guys who are young, some guys who have maybe been around the top team here, but they're unproven. So how much teaching and the teaching, you know, among the players and the teaching between the coaches and the players, how much of that goes on every day?
Well, I think, you know, there's always guys looking up to, you know, a guy above him, or, you know, in just trying to mentor guys. And, you know, I try to mentor, you know, the foreign players, you know, from my experience last year being here, you know, trying to help them out and make them feel as comfortable as possible. And also just the guys to share my experiences and, you know, and also learn from guys that have pitched here and had a lot of success here. So I have a lot to learn still. So I'm looking forward to, you know, just continuing to watch and learn from other guys. But I think there's a lot of that going on in between the players. So, you know, we have a good mix of guys, young and old. So, you know, there's a lot of energy. And but, you know, there's a lot of the learning process going on as well.
Now, you've got new import partners in crime in David and Mark. How do you feel as the veteran guy in Japan bringing them through and saying, okay, well, this is what happens, but this is what you've got to do because, you know, this is you're introducing them to the whole landscape of Japanese baseball?
Yeah. So
as a second year vet.
Yeah. Yeah. For my vast knowledge of experience, you know, I try to fill them in on, you know, even in the, before, you know, when they signed, let them know before coming to Japan what they needed to know, and then, you know, just coming here, you know, they're getting to kind of see it for themselves and learn, but also I'm trying to, you know, help them make that transition a little bit easier for them. And yeah, me and Mark have a, you know, we've known each other for a long time. Actually, we played baseball together in high school, so yeah, so we go way back, so there's always been communication. We played together in the minor leagues with the Yankees as well. So this is our third pit stop together along this baseball journey.
Was that Illinois?
Yeah, Illinois. Yeah, we're both from the south suburbs of Chicago.
Wow, man, yeah. How does that...
Yeah, small world.
No, baseball, man, that's a crazy world. Yeah. I've seen the small world. Yeah. That's at Disneyland. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Did you have anything to do with him joining the Lions?
No, I mean, I recommended it to him that, you know, it's a good place to play and, you know, they take care of you. But, you know, that was between him and the team to, you know, the team was interested in him before I even knew about it. And then, So, but I tried to answer all the questions that he had about coming here and just fill him in. And, you know, I'm happy that he's here. So I have a friend on the team that we go way back.
Awesome. I'm standing here thinking, I did some research. I noticed you both were from that Illinois area and that David was from Massachusetts.
Yes.
And so I'm like, well, okay. It didn't hit me that you might have known each other. And I guess travel ball, I mean, high school, just baseball? Did you play travel ball together?
Yeah, travel ball. Not. We didn't go to the same high school. We played travel ball together. Uh-huh. His dad was our coach, so he was the manager of the team. So, yeah, so we go way back since freshman year of high school.
And what year is that?
2000.
Don't make me. You didn't say there was going to be math.
Or 2006. 2006. Summer of 2006 is when I joined that travel team.
I hate math as well.
Yeah, we go way back. It makes me feel old now.
You don't know what old is yet. Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. So, yeah, he was actually not doing math. Thank you again, Dietrich. He was not doing math in his head at the end there. He was just trying to remember what year exactly that he and Mark met each other. But so I was teasing him about not having any math on the show because I hate math. And we talked about that. But anyway, what did you like about the interview?
Well, like isn't well, let's okay. Well, let's talk about what I liked first.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I did love the point about him going to school with Mark Payton or going to being teammates with Mark Payton when he was in school, to be precise. Of course, last year we had two players in Japan. They weren't teammates, but they were high school teammates from Podunk, California.
Which is Northern California, I'm assuming?
No, actually, I mean Riverside.
Oh, okay.
So they were high school teammates and they were the same year in high school and they got one went to university. I think they both got drafted out of high school or maybe university. I don't remember. But anyway, and I don't recall who it was at this stage because one of them left in the middle of the season and it never like. And of course, like we're not at the stadium, so we can't like talk about it. So.
Right. Yeah, I know that.
But I love that. And, you know, and his, you know, answering questions. Second time in a week, we've talked about that, the player hotline, which is such a big thing now.
Mm.
You know, when there were only two players on the entire roster, you know, if you wanted to add another import player, you had to fire one.
Right. Back in the day, you're talking about. Yeah.
Sure. In the 90s. Right. But now there's so many guys coming and going. I'm going to be in Reno, Nevada at the end of this month, the beginning of May. And I'm hopeful that I might go to see a Reno Aces game, because I'm pretty confident that if there are two minor league teams there, there will be one coach or one player or a scout who I know from Japan.
Yep. Chances are.
Of course, with Reno being kind of, I used to joke that Japan Airlines had a direct flight from Reno to Narita because of so many players who've been through, played in NPB who are from Reno, who now live in Reno. It's really weird. So I'm sure if I show up at the ballpark, if they do have a game and I show up at the ballpark, I'm going to see somebody I know. Chances are indeed. Even if I don't wear a silly grin. Okay. Right.
So Johnny Mathis, right?
Exactly. So the other thing I guess I would comment was, you gave him, you know, you pretty much checked off all the boxes on the, what do you think about the manager checklist? He's good for me. He's good for the team. He brings a lot of energy. Didn't talk about game management or, but that was, you know, meticulous. Okay. Yeah. Preparation. Yep. Okay. So you brought the checklist and crossed them all off. So he's the typical answers about the manager.
Well, do you think, I mean, first of all, he's not going to tell us any of that.
Exactly.
Stuff,
but, That's what I meant.
Right.
You know, he said the right things, and he said I don't think he's lying to us. I don't think so either.
No.
But, you know.
But I mean, it wasn't one of those sanitized, you know, Yomiuri Giants answers, at least. But here's the thing is, I think.
Oh, you mean like it's a fun team?
No, sanitized. So okay. The manager's great.
Yeah.
I think what we're experiencing, especially when you're obviously Dietrich has more experience on the top team than his manager does. So mm-hmm. I think they're just learning each other. And I think it's a learning process for both sides. And he hasn't seen enough. He's got too small a sample size. And that's part of it too. That's part of the answer. And yeah, that's, I understand that.
Yeah, but I just thought I was going. Now he's running, and I'm going. Okay, said this. Okay, all the nice things. Good. Okay, move on. Yeah, that was about it. And you know, I'm glad you got to talk. How about you? Anything you want to add to?
Yeah, I mean, just shocking that you're in the middle of an interview. And like I said, I did look up those guys' names as I was going out because I did want to talk to Dietrich in particular. But you never know who you might end up. You know, mm-hmm. you don't know if the pitcher is going to be at the park. Sometimes they get an off day during the week and all those things. So I prepared to talk to all three guys or either any of the guys if possible. And like I said, Miss Kameda helped me. I got to the park. She said, where are you? I said, I'm up near the press room, near the press box. She said, all right, well, come down to the field. And she helped pull Dietrich aside for me and told the interpreter that he was going to be doing an interview. So, I mean, it was really, really helpful.
Let me ask, since I'm doing a survey of this, how many reporters were talking to players on the field?
Well, I got there at a little bit after.
Were there other reporters on the field?
Oh, yeah. There's a section. So that area that's usually in front of the bench where you can meander around and go anywhere is now cordoned off. And there's a bullpen for reporters, just like at Chiba. And you have to stay within those confines. But yes, if you are obviously in front of the bench, the players still have to go take that aisle, that passageway. There's two ways mm-hmm. to go. There's a passageway just before you get to the dugout. And then there's actually going through the dugout, as you know. Mm-hmm. And the player, you're in that area and you can still grab a player and talk to them.
But there was no sign saying... this is new to me. There's no sign saying off field is off limits to reporters.
No, like
there is in Yokohama.
I saw what you tweeted about them. Yes. No, there's no area.
Yeah, I tweeted that long before I ever saw that one. I had my experience with them in the winter meetings.
But anyway, yes. Moving right along. So yeah, there's indeed a little bullpen and you can actually talk to players.
Also, so it's a little bit the way it was. Okay. That's, it was going to be really interesting. I think it's really going to be interesting to see what happens on May 8th, because when suddenly COVID-19 becomes the same as, the common cold, mm-hmm. the exclusion of reporters from the field for the sake of the pandemic, protecting us from players who got sick the last couple of years because they cared more about us than they did about the players.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. So that'll be interesting to follow. I did notice, and I did catch up this week and find that both CPBL and KBO are exactly where they were before the pandemic in terms of media access, as is MLB. So yes. Japan is the only one that's basically saying, I'm not so fast.
Well,
and it's only some teams.
Yes, I don't mind an easing in, but a patchwork where some places allow full access as usual or as before or similar to before, and others cut us off completely at the knees. That I don't like. So
yeah, especially with the DNA and the Giants letting fans on the field and not reporters.
Right. So getting back to it, I was surprised and shocked as anybody to find out that Mark Payton played on the same travel ball team. Then he said, and we play on the same Yankees farm team, and now we're here in Japan. I immediately thought we've got to get Bob Whiting on this because there's a book in there somewhere. There's got to be more to this story. And these guys, it's great that they can be this far away from home and have someone so familiar with not only their game, but their personality. You have a guy on the field like Mark, and for instance, Dietrich is pitching and Mark is playing an infield position and can come in and talk to him on the mound. That has to be so many refreshing.
Things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many things, because one of the dynamics of being in a country where you don't speak a lot of the language, you don't speak the language that most of your teammates speak easily, is that you are in a position like I am with, the restrictions on media access. Basically, I can only see it from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit, I get a little feedback from you and I get a little feedback from Jason, or to be honest, a lot of feedback from Jason. He's been my partner in crime here. And by having somebody you really know and trust, and you have that long history with, seeing the same thing from his point of view, it really puts things literally in perspective.
Yeah,
that you can't get when you think, is it me? Am I freaking out, or is this actually happening?
It's comforting. It's really comforting.
It is so much so.
And I also like about how Dietrich talked about me. I asked him the question. I said, there's a lot of transition going on. And he went straight to Tomoyama Mori, which makes sense. Mori was a huge factor on the offensive side, and he's a pitcher, and Mori was a catcher. And I see that. And you look at the significance of that, and then you look at the catchers who are left there, the Senna Tsuge, who just passed 100 career games, by the way. And then Yuto Koga, who has 30 plus games to his resume. And these guys are going to have to grow and develop. And he's going to have to help them among the entire pitching staff. Everybody's going to have to help these young catchers. And that was part of, I think we didn't touch on that enough in the prediction shows specials when we talked about the Lions, and that's that they have these catchers, and their stable of catchers in terms of experience is really, really thin. And either one of these guys gets injured, and they're talking about rookies and guys who have played fewer than tens of games in some respects. So they're thin. You gotta hope these guys stay healthy, and we do. We always so I often tell these pitchers and players, and when we do interviews, I always say stay healthy, as healthy as you can, get back soon, because I know this game can really grind, and you get one twinge and it never goes away. It stays. You just have to learn how to manage it, and that's part of it for a long time.
Spoken like somebody almost as old as I am.
Well, someone who's had that twinge bite him and turn into a strain and a muscle tear and all those things. But But yeah, really enjoyed talking to Dietrich. He was really nice as well. And, you know, look forward to talking to him again sometime down the road.
I would add to that, you know, I have a couple of comments about the Lions before I get off of this. And that is, your comment about the catching is really good, because the Lions, you know, they put all their eggs in the Tomo Yomori basket. And then when it became free agent time, they were like, what do we do with that basket? We don't want it. It's old. Because, and I don't mean it really that way. The Lions, Maury was probably, well, he told me he was really torn. That it was really, really hard for him. I get the feeling it wasn't as hard for Hideto Asamura and Takayuki Kishi when they basically said, well, if you've got offers better than ours, go and take them, because we're not giving you a better one.
Right.
I don't think the feeling was quite as warm in those guys' case, although one could not really tell with Asamura. He's a unique character, and Kishi as well, because he never says anything interesting. But Maury
Wakui, Hideaki Wakui as well.
Wakui, well, yeah, that was not a case. Well, they got rid of him, basically. They kicked him off the team pretty much.
Well, so, I just mean that he doesn't say very much. Yeah.
No.
If an interesting comment escaped from his mouth.
Yeah. Well,
the trap,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. He's finally gotten past the. I think he's outlived his. Well, me and Darvish. We think, you know, that thing is, he's over that, past that by this point of his career. Anyway, so there was that, but yeah, just really happy. And I'm glad that the, you know, you went through all this trouble to get the interview, and it just proves that the ends does justify the means.
Well, let's hope so. All right, let's make a four-seam transition. Again, thank you very much, Dietrich, and look forward to talking to you again. Making a four seam transition, and we had a perfect mess on Wednesday at Tokyo Dome in an eventual 2-1 win for the Tigers in 10 innings, but we had drama and then some. Shoki Murakami, a rookie righty, he's a third year pitcher. And in fact, this guy, I mean, he's not like he came from nowhere. And it was one of the things I pointed out in the Central League special, although I didn't name him by name. I just said this team seems to come up with and develop really good pitchers. And this kid last year finished off two consecutive years with the ERA lead and the winning percentage lead in the minors. So he pitched seven perfect innings. He had thrown 84 pitches. He had five strikeouts. There were some well-hit balls, okay, and some good plays behind him. That happens. I think there were maybe three in particular. But, you know, you need your fielders to make all the plays, not just the spectacular ones, too. So that's not a big deal in my mind. But, yeah, okay. So Akinobu Okada, the manager in his second stint with the Hanshin Tigers, pulled him out of this perfect game, and I really didn't know how to feel. We talked about this happening last season with Noki Sasaki with the Lotte Marines, and we understood it. We knew that there were extenuating some circumstances. There was a medical situation with his elbow. They had been babying him into his role as an ace, or molding him as an ace. We understood that it was a circumstance, whatever you want to call it, and he got yanked after eight innings and wasn't able to try to complete back-to-back incredible feats for the Marines. But here, we didn't know very much about this pitcher anyway, and he didn't seem to throw all that hard or anything. It wasn't like he was out there killing himself. He wasn't I watched him. He was not a max effort pitcher or anything. He just, you know, messes up guys' timing really well and spots his pitches, and he was getting his outs. So I knew how I felt. I was kind of upset. And like I have said before and mentioned on this show before, they don't ask us what's going on. They don't ask us what we think. You know, at least in the Roman times, you could put a thumb down and say, finish him, you know, and you had a say in what was going on down there in the arena. But we really don't have a say.
I'm scared to think what if somebody asked you, what should we do with this manager?
Oh, well, he was not even on my radar until Wednesday. But Now I'm getting hot. I got to take this jacket off because I'm just remembering what happened here. But anyway, I have a friend. His name is Alex. He's a Hanshin Tigers fan, and he's born and raised in Japan, but he's an American guy. So he's 100% both Japanese and American because he had a U.S. household, but you know, went to school and everything here in this. I said, "What did you think about the move?" And he wrote back the following: "I felt like it was a bad decision. Players have only a few opportunities in their careers to have a perfect game, and allowing Murakami to continue had so many positive effects for individual and team morale. Yanking him without cause can potentially kill the great momentum that the Tigers have had early in the season." End quote. So that's how he felt as a fan of the team. I'm not necessarily a fan of the team. I don't really put a lot of stock into these things. It's not, you know, it is team over individual. I understand those things. But after the game, I was just really interested in seeing what Okada had to say for himself. And I don't remember, was it the Hamburglar or the Grimace? These 70s commercials with McDonald's, where one of the characters would come on and just kind of mumble. It sounded like he had marbles in his mouth. That's the way Okada talks anyway. He's hard to understand. And he was just rambling. He was going from this excuse to that excuse. I've never done this before. I've never been in this situation.
He was confused. I mean, obviously, he was really conflicted about it. You know, well, and he didn't. He was absolutely 100% certain that he wasn't certain that he'd done the right thing. Yeah. I mean, and that's and it came out like that. Or he was going, you know,
it did.
And I absolutely sympathize with him because
I don't.
Well, okay, fine. I can carry.
And I'm interested why you sympathize with him.
Oh, because you know he's got to make a decision, and not all our decisions are right.
On what though? I would be fine if he told us. He did not tell us. He didn't say this pitcher has a history of this.
No, he didn't.
We had
that.
Him on a strict pitch count.
I mean, he thought
he just mumbled and rambled.
No, he just, you know, he made a decision based on, you know, his team, what was best for the team, and it didn't, you know.
But why would see that you're saying you're giving him the excuses that he gave us, and I'm saying I want substance. Okay, don't give me cliche statements that you come out and make after any old regular season game. This was not that.
Yeah.
This was something special. This was something different.
Yeah. You know what? No, it's a baseball game.
It is. It is. And I totally, the game is for us because we are the observers and we are the fans per se, but it's not for us. We know that the team, you know, they come out, the players always come out and say, "Hey, you know, we couldn't have done this without you," or "the power of the fans cheering for me that sent that ball over the this and that and the other." No, it isn't. They don't care. And that, those are just lines.
That's harsh. They do care.
They care, but they don't care.
It's just, yeah, it's not, nobody thinks it was the fans carrying them over the fence. Except,
no, yeah.
Unless
I mean,
they're
they
on
care.
TV talking about it.
They care, but they don't care. And so exactly. He didn't give us substance. I'm not angry. I just wanted to know why. And he never came out. Like
why?
I said,
and
he took his hat off. He's scratching his head. He looked like he had just gotten in a car wreck and people were in the hospital in surgery. And he was like nervous and didn't know what to do. And he rambled. And I'm like, none of these things add up to that. These excuses and these cliches that you're giving us, not one of them adds up to a reason. And okay. I just wanted to know the real reason.
Yeah. Okay.
And there probably is one, but he didn't give it to us.
I'm sure. Well, I think it was, he thought at the time A, B, or C. And you know what? Fine. That's his job. I'm good with it.
He is the manager.
It wasn't what I would call a dumb decision. You know, it wasn't like, oh, this guy's cruising and I know everything about him. I know what his track record is. Whatever his reason was, you know, he knows him better than I do. I don't get hot about this stuff. You know, I just think people who get bent out of shape about this are a little too into things that probably they can't control and
careful,
worried about things they can't control that
no,
is really good, probably good for them.
Well, you know me. You like,
I know you get worked up about stuff, John.
No, no, no. I don't get worked up about things like this. This is, I mean, shout out a guy, you know, nears 100 pitches, and you got to get. I mean, yes, 145 pitch gate was a serious issue for me, and I'm glad the gods opened up the clouds and rained for Shinnosuke Ogasawara, the Dragons, and he didn't have to pitch the next week after throwing his arm off, and he pitched fairly well yesterday after getting 2 weeks off, which he needed. I worry about the players. I worry about the physical, you know, and the mental stress that goes on with the players. And
I think your friends, Alex, oh, well, this is going to like somehow ruin something for the guy. I mean,
maybe I think it can potentially kill great momentum.
It could potentially.
Yeah. I mean, he was careful. Alex's comments are fine.
But again, we're talking about things that make sense in some way, but aren't really truth, aren't really knowledge. They're just things that sound right to us. They make sense to us, but they're not knowledge. We don't know this.
What are you talking about? Like, yeah. What?
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't know. You really don't.
And no, we don't know what, though.
You don't know whether it's going to kill this or kill that. You don't know it's going to kill his momentum, or it's best for him to come in or stay out. We don't know any of that.
We don't. So
it's just it's a thing that shouldn't be done because you think it shouldn't be done.
And that's not even what I'm saying, though.
Why is it an issue for you if he made this decision?
My point, the whole point
should
about
have explained it to your satisfaction. Oh, I'm sorry, he didn't explain it to your satisfaction.
No, yes, he gave cliches. He didn't explain it to my satisfaction.
Well, I
he
got
gave
the feeling,
cliches though. It wasn't like he even tried.
I got the feeling that he was like he was absolutely 100%. He didn't know he made the right decision. He was sort of kicking himself for making the decision he did make, and really, really relieved that they won the game.
Well, yeah, at that point it didn't matter if they had won to me because I'm not a fan, but it didn't matter if they had won the game or lost the game because the only thing people are going to take away from this game is that a pitcher threw 7 perfect innings and came out. So it doesn't matter whether they won or lost the game in my mind.
Yeah, to me that's.
Yeah, and it does to them. That's a W that they got. That they got a W.
A lot of people take it like really, really seriously. And to me, it's really important for the individual. It's really important in ways that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how they are. I don't understand how important it is. And I'll guarantee you don't understand how important it is.
I wouldn't claim to know.
No, I know.
You know, things are just a part of history.
I can't really get really worked up about it at all.
Well, you know, I don't recall Okada being like a conservative manager. So I don't know why this happened. And
he's got his rules. He's a little bit, he's got rules for how he does things, and he tends to follow them. And then I've brought up stories in the past where he's done something because it's what he always did, and then realized afterwards that it was a dumb thing to do. But he's you know, having rules and having, you know, in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have followed the rules kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he kind of manages. I've noticed in the past, you know, once he's got a way of doing it, he's going to do it. He doesn't go on the, okay, I'm not going to kick him this week, so I'll just stop right there. Cause
Shinji
Sasaoka, you know where that one was going.
I believe he was on the radio call today with the Hiroshima Carp. I was listening to that one on the radio. So yeah, Shinji Sasaoka. Yeah, go ahead.
No, actually, it wasn't. It was somebody else. But no, the although I give you one of the dumb comments before we get to that game. Somebody said, "Well, wow, that was good hitting," and the former. The former player for that team who then tried to become a professional wrestler after his base, because I don't mean to criticize him, because being a former pro baseball player is a really hard gig in Japan, because mm-hmm. most of these guys know nothing except going to practice every day.
Right. Yeah.
Even for the best, the biggest stars, it's hard. Kosuke Fukudome told me in Miami. He said he really wanted to get that hit, and the cheering of the fans made the difference. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy, I don't know what he learned in pro wrestling, maybe he said too many times. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I understand the whole thing as a fan that, you know, this is entertainment. And
yeah, I mean, I get it that people do get worked up.
No, for us, it's entertainment. For these guys, it's their livelihoods, and they're trying to win, and they're trying to, the manager are trying to manage for the entire season, not just for one game. I always say these things. I'm always the devil's advocate for these managers making these decisions, although Kazuyoshi Tatsunami is killing me. But anyway, with some of his decisions.
Well,
but
you know,
there's
like a conventional wisdom that says, you know, we have this thing in Japan, whereas if you do the orthodox move, you pretty mm-hmm. much never get criticized.
Right.
I mean, I swear you could be losing by 3 runs in the 9th inning. And if there were runners on 1st and 2nd and you bunted with your best hitter, nobody mm-hmm. would say a word.
Yeah.
they would say, well, that's him trying to win by playing Japanese style baseball. Not that it's really dumb.
Yeah.
He's and showing there's guts. That a large, there's a large thing about that. So yeah, it is the way it is, but I don't get upset. I don't get too upset when people get upset about these things, you know. Oh, you know, he must not have, he couldn't take him out because he was throwing a perfect game, as I've heard, or he had to pitch this guy, or, but I remember, you know, when back in the 90s, if a guy had thrown 145 pitches through 8 innings, and he was leading 1-0.
7 2/3, yeah.
Yeah, but true enough. But, you know, I did a study once, and I'll keep this one short. I did a study once about what happens with pitchers in certain situations, with games with certain pitcher situations and leads. And I found that in Japan, this was about 15 years ago, and found that very often teams would leave their starting pitcher in with in a scoreless game in the 9th inning.
Mm.
And you know how many, and I forget what it was, but there was a whole year, and I said it happened like 15 times that the starting pitcher was left in a scoreless game in the 9th inning, and he lost like 13 of those games.
Makes sense.
It was the thing Japanese everybody style, did. Right? Nobody was going to criticize them because it was the thing they did. But, you know, it's no longer that era. But, yeah. So you can always get by with doing whatever you think is the orthodox, even if it's dumb. Even if it's also patently dumb to you, you can avoid criticism. And sometimes in Japan, avoiding criticism is the most important thing.
Yeah, well, again, this is just more proof that the sports are for us, but not about us as observers. And this, I mean, you know, I tweeted out disappointment, disgust, and disbelief and all that stuff. And I was just shocked at why, you know, we were all robbed, but I don't know, and we don't know. And Alex commented about what it could do to the team, but we don't know. You're right. But I just thought, you know, we had this opportunity. Why? And he just
maybe. You know, maybe my perspective is shaped by the fact that I didn't have to write a perfect game story.
Yeah, well, that's
lazy.
That's fine. That's part of it. That plays a role in your perspective. That's fine too. But you know, I at least I'd like to hear why. You know, and you say I'm not satisfied. I don't think it's just me. And I think there are a lot of people out there. And
I think there are
a lot of people. Money to want to go to the game. A lot of people spent their time watching the game. We deserve to know a reasonable explanation. I don't think it's too much to ask.
Okada too you know, part of him wishes he left him in to see what happened. It's just that he can't do both.
I don't think so. I don't know because he did, but we don't know because he didn't give us a reason why he took him out.
When he said, like, you know, he made the decision and then he's going like, oh, everybody wanted him to throw a perfect game. Well, where do I go to hide?
There's no place to hide. No. Anyway, I could tell you this, Kazuhiro Sasaki and Tomoya Satozaki both won a former pitcher, won a former catcher, and they were perplexed by the decision and they couldn't understand it either. So, and also one story I read said that Okada only let him throw the seventh because of where they were in the batting order. He was going to take him out in the sixth.
I may be misinterpreting him, but he said, they said, well, you took him out. And he said, well, I first thought about it. I saw that his spot in the batting order was coming up in the seventh. And that's when I decided.
Yeah. So, well,
I think he was, which is
more ramble because what makes sense is, oh, his spot's coming up. I'll take him out now and then we'll get a pinch hitter to come up. And that would be the plan.
That's what happened.
No, I'm saying we'll take him out after the sixth and then because they're going to lead off in the seventh. They're on the road. They're hitting in the top of the seventh inning. So if his batting order is coming, if his spot's maybe coming up.
Oh, excuse me, then it was in the eighth.
Yeah. So okay.
He saw in the seventh. I'm saying he saw in the seventh that his I misspoke that. He saw in the seventh that his spot was coming up.
Again, yeah.
Okay.
It was weird, obviously, because
he took him out with, I think there was a runner on base and he brought in his ace pinch hitter, Fumihito Haraguchi, which makes perfect sense.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to, let's calm down and cool off and make a two seam transition and get to what everybody wants to talk about. So. Yeah. I'm talking about myself. Make a two seam transition and feature our Rockin' with Roki Samurai Showdown edition. And this was on Friday night. I think the whole baseball world, including people in MLB across the pond, they wanted to watch this game. And big interest in Sasaki and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I've been calling him Japan Ace for a long time in those PL descriptions that I've been writing. This is the third year of that, too. Wow.
That's you and you and the rest of the world.
Yeah. So, but I think that the baton was either passed or snatched away or something, because it's obvious Sasaki is the big draw and the big arm. And I think a lot more people are salivating about him than Yamamoto, who can pitch and was really pitching well. And I think he got robbed by his defense, the defense behind him that night. But anyway, Zozo Marine Stadium on Friday ended up being a 2-0 shutout for Sasaki and the Marines. And Roki goes 7 innings, 11 strikeouts, had, I believe, 10 strikeouts through 4 innings.
Yep.
So he slowed off of that pace. He finished with a couple walks. And then Yamamoto goes 6 innings. He allowed a walk, 9 strikeouts for him, and a run allowed on a ball that probably could have been caught. I messaged with Jim and I said, I'm scoring that an error. But Jim said it took a bad hop, and I thought, well, yeah.
Hey, it took a bad, windy. Not a bad hop, but a rather spin, a bad yeah. spin, yeah, right? Yeah, it spun yeah. away
I know
from
what
me.
You meant. I know yeah. exactly what you meant, but I'm quoting what you said because I don't want to misquote you.
Fine.
Wow. Well, I like that. Wow. This time.
I'm good.
I'm good. So, Sasaki was perfect through 5 innings. And I think what would impress me more is they were talking about it on the broadcast is the slider. The Darvish slider that he's throwing now, I guess you, Darvish, and he spoke and talked about slider grips. And now he's throwing that in there along with the fastball and the forkball. And it's just wicked. If you're a hitter, someone did Sasaki's stats for the season so far. And I think it's like, you know, a whole bunch of innings and only a couple hits. And somewhere I'll find the tweet. But what did you think about the game?
I thought it was really a beauty. It was one of the better, you know, it's, it was a different kind, you know, we've seen some really, really well pitched games, but two guys at that level. And, you know, Sasaki was perfect on the score sheet through five innings. He was really perfect through four. And then, you know, he got by a couple innings, you know, with some good defense and he was missing pitches.
Okay, I got the totals here. So 13 innings, 42 batters faced, 22 strikeouts. So he's just striking out half of the guys he's facing.
More than half,
but about half. Two walks, two hits, no runs. He's just incredible. It's not fair, is what's happening with that.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of comments. One about the slider. Okay, this is a pitch. I have been seeing this pitch forever. It's basically a big breaking slider. Tim McCarver used to call it a nickel slider. He used to call it a nickel slider as opposed to a dime slider, which has a very tight spin. It's got a big swervy kind of thing, and it's harder to control. And it's pretty much in Japan, you know, you see this a lot with sidearm lefties throw something like that, you know, the frisbee kind of delivery, mm-hmm. and you know, and sidearmers and some guys will throw this pitch that really breaks away and you can get it. You can also throw it if you're really good at it. You can throw it, you know, as an indoor pitch if you're a right-handed pitcher to a right-hander, and it looks like it's going to hit them and it crosses the strike zone.
Yeah.
It all depends on command and things. And Sasaki's command is still not his best thing. But the interesting thing was, Darvish and Ohtani were helping people out with this pitch during the run up to the WBC. And I never heard it called a sweeper until Ohtani struck out Mike Trout with it in the WBC. I'm going, sweeper. I'm going, okay, that's a slider.
I've heard the term sweeper slider for a while.
That was the first I'd ever heard it. But this Sasaki's previous slider, the one he threw, was basically thrown at a slight downward angle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became kind of like a hard curve. Although Ko Matsukawa, his catcher for most of last year, said it was more like a cutter. And I'm going, I got to talk to that kid because just to make sure what he means, because he threw that, he'd been throwing his slider as kind of a, he threw his slider mostly to right-handed hitters last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw the forkball mostly to left-handed hitters. That was sort of the mix. Although he didn't throw the slider to left-handed hitters, but whereas he would throw the forkball to the other guys. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
I know, a
split there. This is a completely different pitch. It's still a slider, but it's a completely different pitch. And the interesting thing was last Monday's, maybe it was last Sunday, there's a website I'd never seen before. It's called Kokukara Next, and they've had a bunch of stories that I've read have been really insightful. So that's one thing I noticed was about this. They're talking about his sweeper, and I said, well, he only threw it three times, but on the other hand, it was really windy. It was windier in his first start. And he hadn't thrown in a game since the WBC. And he only threw three of them. But watch out, because this thing's coming. I'm going, wow. It seems unfair because he's already got his fastballs. I'm spilling on tonight's blog. It's written. It just hasn't been posted yet. So I wrote on the blog tonight that, you know, it seems unfair that his fastball is a little better than it was last year. And his command of his splitter is still bad, but it's better than it was a couple of the, I think he got hit, one of his pitches got hit to the warning track when he hung a couple later. He was hanging pitches and missing pitches a lot in the last couple innings. But his sliders, his fastball's a little better. The splitter's a little better in terms of command. And now he's got this. And it seems like there ought to be, like, the players union ought to be complaining.
Yeah, because if you're a hitter, like I said last time, like, if you don't go up there sitting fastball, then you're going to be sitting on the bench really fast. And then you've got these other weapons that you've got to fight off. You got to try to foul them off. You're not going to hit them. You're not going to put them in play. Not most of the time, because he's throwing them out of the zone anyway, the breaking stuff. So you're just sitting on a fastball and you say, look, if it comes near the zone, I'm swinging.
And then yeah, well, I'll tell you, if he can consistently stay on top of his fastball, this is like his war, is to stay on top of his fastball, because it's got, he keeps throwing it. And in the WBC, he was getting so much movement on the fastball that where he wasn't getting with the Japan ball last year, except a little bit early in the season. But if he can get any like reasonable hop on that pitch, it's, they're not going to care whether he can throw a slider. They're just going to go up there holding the barrel of the bat and say, hope that he can't throw it in the strike zone four times.
Yeah. I was only disappointed because we were all excited about the game. You were doing live blogging. I was watching every moment, you know, rewinding on my player to, you know, between pitches and then trying to catch back up to live action. But just that Yamamoto pitched so well, and he pitched, you know, I tweeted, I don't have the blazing rocket coming out of my hand, but I can pitch. And he was making pitches, and he's throwing a curveball that he hadn't thrown so much before in the past. And so that's devastating, because guys, I don't remember seeing it as much.
Oh, that was that's the best curveball in Japan, I think.
Yeah. No, I just haven't seen it as much. I mean, he threw a lot. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, he did.
I wasn't used to seeing that many of them. And go ahead.
I was just saying, there was a pitcher the other day who was a rookie pitcher, the Oryx kid, the kid.
Oh, Yamashita. Shunpei
Yamashita, he has a wicked curveball.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking when they were throwing out of him. Damn, that thing is good.
Yeah. So, you know, I just was disappointed by the defense behind him, like I said earlier, that they couldn't make that one play with two outs and get him out of that inning. And I was anticipating it was going to go scoreless, you know, late into the game. And I think once that one run came across, I think everyone just kind of assumed, this is Rookie's game to win or lose now.
It's not like he was completely blameless. He hung two pitches.
Are you talking about Yamamoto?
Yamamoto, he hung two pitches. But you see, the thing is, when he's got so many weapons, he's got so many pitches that can move in different ways and change speeds and change angles, that you know, hitting a fat pitch is not easy.
No.
So basically he missed with two, I think they were both breaking. One was a slider and one was a curveball, but he missed up. And what they did was they beat him into the turf. And then he gave up a solid single on a pretty good pitch. And then he's got runners on first and third because somebody, all they could do with his pitch was beat it into the turf, and it hopped over the first baseman's head for a single. Then, same thing, pitch up in the zone. The guy barely makes contact because it's got a weird spin on it, you know. So, but that stuff happens.
It happens,
so.
Yeah.
But what a great game! And I had so much traffic. There was this whole stream of Twitter people, how do I watch this game in America? Because Joey Baseball Britain Korea was saying, check out Jim's how to get on to PLTV, specifically TV tutorial.
Well, it was that kind of game. It was that kind of night. It was very special. And we got to move on, though. We got to finish the show here. We'll have another Rocking with Roki segment this next week. So, one note, there was a game a week ago today between the Fighters and the Buffaloes, and catcher Torai Fushimi, previously of the Buffaloes, now of the Fighters, got a ball caught in his equipment. And this was intriguing to me because there was a rule that was introduced in 2020 that if this happens with a catcher, and she means the catcher, and he got a pitch that bounced and that's what got caught in between his chest protector and his uniform, basically. And this rule says that that was introduced in 2020 that I didn't hear about, said that all runners are awarded the next base if a ball is trapped in the catcher's equipment. And I saw this play that day. It was against the Fighters, and a run came across because the bases were loaded when it happened. And I believe they were loaded. Maybe it might have been second and third. But anyway, at first, I didn't know. I didn't think the rule was fair. I'm like, well, geez, you know, he can't help that. That it's his equipment. He's trying to stop a 100-something-kilometer pitch. Give a guy a break. But then I thought, wait a second. If you're a runner, let's say a big runner like Chubbs, say Inoue, and you can't see where the ball is, but you want to take that extra base, it really isn't fair, because you don't know where the ball is. And so
Let's start with the fact that it's probably not fair to have, say, Inoue trying to take an extra base anyway.
Well, he might just take a chunk out of it, but hey,
well, he's going to take. Yeah, exactly. No, right.
I mean, considering
somebody threw him out from right field on a relay throw that hopped once to the second baseman and hopped once to the baseman.
Yes, yes. Was that a relay throw? That's right. He was trying to get a triple. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
They were two one hop relay throws.
Hey man, hey, take that base and put some sauce on it.
You beat me to that one.
But anyway, so I guess, you know, guys, anybody thinking about taking that potential base, if they can't see the ball,
right. It
makes sense. So I thought that was an interesting rule. I don't know if it's in the major leagues or not, but
you know, it makes perfect sense. It's not, and as you said, the umpires were right on it, which is good to know, because watching umpires with the obstruction rule, you'd think that they never heard of it before.
Yeah, well, yes, or don't know how to. Yeah.
Or
they're
or
confused about how to apply it.
The WBC broadcast when the announcer said, "That's great blocking." Walking the plate, but he didn't have the ball. What a great job by the catcher to break the rules.
Yeah, you can't block the plate, and you definitely can't block the plate if you don't have the ball.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but here, you know, let's get it right. Oh, goodness. At least the umpires kind of know. They know the rules in retrospect, so there's more than you can say for some announcers.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one comes from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo via email, and he says, "Hi, John and Jim, stellar work as always, chaps. Love the real life person sitting with person interview with Polanco. Awesome. I was excited for you. You will probably have millions of fielding questions this week." Well, no, we didn't. It's just yours, Glenn. But just in case.
Yeah, but seems like a million from Glenn.
Yeah,
worth a million.
Your picture is worth a million. Never mind. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, his question: with MLB pitch clocks, batters staying in the box, bigger bases, less shifting, more steals, fabulous pace of game changes all going on, I watched my beloved Tigers, and this must be the Hanshin Tigers, ground out several 4+ hour games so far this season. I know it sells more towels and beers, but do you think the MPB brain trust, whomever they may be, will make any changes? Do they care, or does the WBC win somehow validate the MPB product? That's a bunch of questions. Also, with Sakamoto...
Yes, no.
Also, with Sakamoto fading at short, Hata now has two permanent holes to try to plug 45 revolving players into. Go G-Man, he says, teasingly, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. Which question and do you want
to the rules. Okay, well, let me put it this way then. Which of the rules in MLB would you like to see in Japan?
Me? I would like to see the pitch clock.
Yeah, the pitch timer, to be precise.
Well, what I call it is basically a pitch clock, but it's a play clock. I think I said it earlier this year. I said it's not the onus is not just on the pitcher, because the batter has to be ready. So it's basically a game clock or
yeah, I think that in conjunction with the pitcher disengagement, limiting the throws to the bases, I love.
I don't mind that. I would like to see the bigger bases, but I want to see the bases extended on the corners into foul territory.
Yeah, so the way that, they do with softball, yeah.
So that the runners don't have to clash with the first baseman and the third baseman.
Why do what's, you know, that's baseball. So I'm saying, well, they had collisions when my dad played, so they should have collisions now. What's wrong with these people? And the answer is,
we're softer, yeah, well, so we have to make the adjustment socially.
Yeah, obviously, because there was one too many collision in your family, perhaps.
Hashtag high heat.
Those cranial things can take quite, I can tell you, slamming your head into beams and into people's foreheads can take its toll on your brain power.
There you go.
And so no, I think those would be great. I've always advocated for limiting throws to the bases. And I saw an MLB that, I mean, just watching the Japan games and, you know, and seeing throw after throw to first base and look at third first base and taking your foot off the, and I'm saying, we don't need any of this. And the reason I like that is because it allows players with speed to have extra value.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them something that is fun to watch. People running instead of people being anchored to first base and endless. I mean, what would you rather see, people running or 10 pickoff throws to first base?
Easy math.
It's like a dumb question to me. So,
Easy math.
So that, and I think the pitch timer, the timer of for the batter and the pitcher, I would be all in for that. I think it's good all the way around. The shift, I don't care. I really, really don't care about. I thought it was a dumb idea in the first place. But in Japan, it seems particularly meaningless considering.
Yeah, bat control.
Yeah, exactly.
General bat control.
Yeah, and they know that if you shift on somebody, they'll do a Shohei Ohtani on your butt.
For me, Glenn, it really is a matter of time. RR. You should see the face that Jim is making. I don't know that MLB is the be-all, end-all for the NPB in terms of all the rules. However...
No, I'm saying absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm show of support there for
show
John's
of support.
Point.
All right.
Got to do it once a year.
Once a year. But I think it is going to happen in certain aspects. And I just think it's going to come. The global baseball game is changing. And the more WBC tournaments we have, the more we have to make similar rules internationally so that everybody's playing a similar version, a similar adaptation of these games, so that when they get together on the international stage, they don't have to make so many adjustments to the rules as well. So I can see it coming to MPP, but I don't think it's going to be that fast. But I do think we're going to hear some rumblings later in the season when some of these fifth place and sixth place teams are playing 5-hour games and things are dragging out. In that respect, we'll start to hear some rumblings, and probably in the offseason, we'll get something. Probably, yeah, timers on the pitches is what I could see coming first.
I think that's the one that will happen.
Yeah,
I think the chances of limiting pickoff throws will throw the old boys into conniptions.
Yeah, they'll never let
because,
it happen.
Because, no, that's an essential, you know, that boredom is an essential part of baseball, as Masaaki Mori used to argue when he was manager of the Lions. I'm absolutely not joking.
Yeah, I wouldn't think
that was the early 90s, and he got into a shouting match with Keiji Osawa, the Fighters manager, who said, "Ah, the Lions are so boring. All this sacrifice bunting and pickoff throws. Oh, what do you want? It's like going to watch a stockholders meeting." And he's going, "Well, we're here to play winning baseball. We don't care about what's entertaining," Maurice said.
Yeah, obviously. But I think, yeah, it's more entertaining, the product. I've been watching. To be honest, I've been watching some of the MPB games, and it looks like the players got their warning maybe it's at some point, because they're being more crisp in their play. I would say that.
I think
a
so
little
too.
More crisp.
I think so. The pitchers, when there's nobody on base, I think, of course, somebody was saying that about Yuki Nishi the other day, and that he was throwing, but he always threw fast. He was one of those guys who pretty much, he's a streaky guy. He would go into these stretches where he'd win 8-9 games in a row and then lose 7-8 games. I think he doesn't, when he's in a streak, he doesn't want it to slow down.
Right. But we've got our ball rubbers and our wanderers, our mound wanderers. We've got those guys in the glove adjusters and the batter's box. And I need to take some time. But I think MPB has picked up on that. And I think the players are anticipating there's going to be a change. So it's coming, Glenn. It is coming. And hopefully we get more email coming from you, people who are listening. I really appreciate Alex being on time with his message for me about the Hanshin incident, the perfect mess, and really appreciate that. And Glenn, we always like your talking points, so thank you very much. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. You can send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. Man, this was fun. I'm so glad that I was able to get out to Sabre Dome. Like I said, we've got some interviews. Jim is trying to get some too. And we're just looking forward to the season going on. And no more rainouts like we had today. I was watching three games and I thought, wow, I'm watching all three games at once and there's only three. You know, what's going on?
I was actually going to Chiba, but I knew that my chances of talking to players in the batting facility, the indoor facility there.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be easy, but now I'm thinking they're probably not going to let me go in and talk.
Yeah, not yet.
Like, but they don't let people talk in some parks there. So,
all right, folks, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.